This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 134.
We have an opportunity to really have an impact on people, their careers, their futures, the talent pipeline, as well as the definition of what is a job in the future. So we can really have an impact and have our fingerprints on that. And ultimately, it is a game changer with the business. If you have great HR partners that are doing a lot of the things that we talked about today, it's the differentiator between a company that might have 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 years of blips of success and long-term sustainable growth and success in a company.
How can you build a fit-for-purpose company? And why should you get comfortable asking for help? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Imagine having direct access to 18 world-class thought leaders who will elevate and transform how you think about HR. As many of you know, late last year, I launched Elevate, a 3-week virtual development experience that over 100 HR leaders attended and participants described as a master's degree in HR at a fraction of the cost and by far the most engaging learning experience in years. Elevate 2025 returns on May 20th, and it's specifically designed to elevate HR business partners and Center of Excellence professionals, strategic capabilities, and business impact. Who will you learn from at Elevate? We're talking Dave Ulrich on the next agenda for HR, Muriel Wilkins on breaking through limiting beliefs, Mark Efron on connecting talent philosophy to business strategy, plus sessions on AI-driven process redesign, agile HR, top team effectiveness, operating model transformation, how to communicate like an executive, what your CEO actually wants from HR, and how to get your expertise actually used. Every session is designed with the goal of helping you to take your business acumen, strategic thinking, influence, and coaching capabilities to the next level. Also, the 16 interactive sessions include live Q&A, where your specific challenges and questions get addressed by the expert themselves. And with recorded sessions and slides available afterwards, you don't have to worry about missing a session, or even better, you and your team can revisit these insights again and again. So what are you waiting for? Register now or learn more at www.elevate2025.vip/nextgenhr or go to futureofhr.com. But hurry, as early bird pricing is available for only a limited time. Don't miss this once-a-year chance to transform your capabilities and career at Elevate 2025. And with that, my guest this week is Lisa Chang. Lisa is the Global Chief People Officer for the Coca-Cola Company. And in her role, she and her team are focused on making sure the company's people strategies help deliver on the company's purpose of refreshing the world and making a difference. Before joining the iconic Coca-Cola brand, Lisa served as the Senior Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer at AMB Group in Atlanta, a privately held sports and entertainment conglomerate. But Lisa's influence extends well beyond her role at Coca-Cola, as she serves on the board of advisors at Catalyst, where she's championed workplace inclusion and accelerating progress for women. And she also holds several other board positions with the Coca-Cola Scholars Foundation, at the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, and Frontier Communications. This is a great conversation with a world-class leader, and I know you'll enjoy it, as Lisa and I discussed how asking for help is not a sign of weakness, but rather a sign of strength, why HR leaders must focus on creating value through talent and organizational capabilities, how Coca-Cola is embracing a head-heart-hand strategy to optimize and deploy AI technologies, why HR functions need to embrace the mantra of progress over perfection, and the concept of people sustainability and its importance for long-term organizational success. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Lisa. Lisa, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Really excited to have you on the podcast. And I want to start a conversation and ask you about a pivotal experience that you had while you were at the head of HR for the Weather Channel digital business. So you were obviously the head of HR for that business, but then you were asked to be the general manager of the Weather Channel's downloadable desktop weather application, which is a revenue-driving role, and you owned a P&L. Just talk about how this happened and how this experience impacted how you think about HR.
Yeah, for sure. It was surprising, but somewhat of my own doing, because I had been working closely with the business on several transformative org designs. We were entering the era of the internet and trying to figure out what that would mean for our business. And I became very intrigued with, what does this all mean? How's it going to impact our people? I had been asking for more opportunities to get involved in understanding different parts of the business. And so where that took us was the CEO had asked me to take on the responsibility of running this new product line, which is the precursor to the apps of today. And this was before we were using mobile devices, but it would sit in your desktop system tray and provide you with alerts and an ability to interact it. It was video generated, et cetera. But it was, as you said, a revenue generating product. You register for the product. We put you on those dreaded mailing lists and things like that. When she asked me to do it, my first question was, why me? Because I don't know anything about digital products. I'm not a revenue generating expert. I know nothing about project management. And her answer to me was basically, you have the skill set that we need, which is bringing a group of disparate people together, surrounded by a common vision and strategy, and enabling and encouraging them to use their skills to a common good. That's when I started thinking, wow, this HR thing could come in handy, because it's really, that really is what our job is to do, is to enable people to do the best that they can do in the right environment for a purpose to advance business. So that's how it came about. I was incredibly nervous about what it would all mean. I learned far beyond my wildest capabilities that I ever thought I would have. It's very stressful, but I think it really forever shaped my point of view of what is the role of HR and how can we contribute to the overall business strategy, and how can we be enablers of that and not just the administrative function that everybody has known HR for.
Yeah, it's an incredible experience. I love that you were raising your hand for more responsibilities. And I think that, kind of careful what you wish for, but that's what we should be doing, is looking for those opportunities to have more impact. And the CEO recognized that you had that ability as well. As you're building that product out, were just, how did you get up to speed in the learning curve, right? Or did you say, hey, I don't have to learn that because my job is to really bring people together, so I need to learn a different way or bring a different kind of value?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, certainly I tried to start learning and reading up and consuming as much information as I could to understand what it all means and how the business works. And fortunately, some of my education came into play. You know, I have an MBA, and I started thinking, okay, now I need to really understand what this P&L thing's all about and all that. So that was important. But I also recognized that really my job, as she indicated, was to find the best people that had the right skill sets to work together towards this greater opportunity that we had, which was to capture new audiences and create opportunities for our advertisers and our customers to reach them. And so the first thing I did was say, we got to assemble the best team. We called ourselves the Tiger Team. And it was really like, who's the best product manager? Who's the best developer? Who's the best person, the most creative person in business development that can help us sell this thing that nobody knows what it is? And I always did try to be really clear with the team that I'm not the product expert. I'm not the developer. I know that I don't know these things, and I'm not going to try to tell you what to do. My job really is to build that overarching strategy collectively with your input and then help enable you to do what you do best. So remove obstacles, ask for resources, give visibility to the team when they need it. That really was where I started to understand the importance of that. Now, it didn't happen overnight because I do remember early on, we had a really complex question we were trying to answer around, should we sell more by making access to the product super easy? So it was a registration product. You know, you put your name, your phone number, whatever, and then we give it to you and we can get a lot more downloads. So we go for volume, but the amount of data we collected was few. And so it wasn't worth as much revenue because advertisers would only pay a small amount for three data elements. Or do we extend the registration process, ask more questions? Do you like cars? Do you play golf? The more questions you ask, the longer the registration process, but the more valuable that is to advertisers. We had this whole debate about it, and I went away for the weekend, and I thought, I'm smart, I can figure this out. And I literally did math equations all weekend trying to figure out what the right answer was. At the end of the weekend, I said to my husband, you know, I'm going to get fired because I can't figure out the answer to the question. There's no answer.
And he's like, no.
It's okay. Just go in and ask for help. Maybe other people have better perspectives. When I went in the next week to talk to the CEO and I basically said, look, you know, I think I failed at this exercise because there really isn't a right answer. It's either this or that with due trade-offs. And while I expected the answer to be, okay, yeah, we made a mistake. We put you in the job. You don't know what you're doing. The answer was, that's the problem we've been trying to figure out. There is no right answer. It's more of this or less of this. And it's a judgment decision. And so I think, again, realizing the limitations of kind of your own capabilities and then recognizing that the most complex questions are not easy to answer. So I quickly discovered that trying to be the person that knows all the answers was not going to be a fruitful exercise.
Yeah, and what I love about that, too, is I think it was a lesson of being an executive to the point that there isn't a right answer. There's trade-offs and decisions and strategic choices that you have to make that would make the most sense in that situation, which you obviously got to and had to make that choice. I think we're all kind of now curious, what did you choose to do? Did you go more registration or make registration harder and get more quality data?
The answer is a little bit of both. We sort of found the happy medium. We went more than three elements, but less than 20. And we just tried to balance as much as possible. And we put in perspective the competition, because obviously healthy competition is always good. But there was another competing product at the time called WeatherBug that had far more downloads than ours. But it was also one of those invasive things that just attacks your computer. Like it gives you a thing that looks like you have a virus and it says click here. And then all of a sudden it's downloaded onto your system. So they were touting the millions of downloads that they had, but they didn't really get the downloads in the most trustworthy way. And they didn't have data that was really sellable. So we just kind of said, look, let's change the benchmark of who we're competing against and know that what we're trying to do is generate value for our customers, not try to be the person that says we sold the most product.
Sounds like a smart decision. The other piece you started to talk a little bit about, but I know it's really a big part of your career philosophy, is that you should be willing to ask for help. Just talk about more why this is important and you think next-gen HR leaders need to apply this advice more often.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the point of both that experience as well as many others earlier in my career is as high-achieving individual contributors, we always feel that we're the smart ones and we're supposed to be able to figure this out. It's at times feels like a sign of weakness or a sign of ignorance or lack of capability if you have to ask for, quote, help. And so you sort of feel this thing of, I shouldn't have to ask for help. I'm a capable person. Why can't I figure this out? But I learned again early on that the whole point of being part of a company or a team is to leverage the different experiences that everybody has for a greater good. As soon as I started to realize that trying to be the smartest person in the room or have all the answers or be the leader that tells everybody what to do, and you sort of drop that pressure and you kind of say, look, you know, here's my perspective, but what do you all think? And help me solve this problem together. It really is the 1+1=3 equation. And that became and has become an important part of my own leadership, which is I really try not to dictate things to the teams, especially even now I manage a very senior team of people and they don't like to be managed. And here are the 10 things I want you to do and how I want you to do it. They want to be given the latitude to use their own judgment and experiences. And so that's why I think it's important to realize that asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of understanding your capabilities, leveraging others' capabilities, and recognizing that the best outcomes come from multiple perspectives, not one.
Yeah, it's an important reminder that it's okay to ask for help. And people really want to help you when you ask. Typically, they feel good about doing that. So as long as you ask in the right way and you've put some work into it, so you're not coming with, hey, just give me the answer, but more of like, I've been really thinking about this. I know you have experience. What would you do better, or how else can I go? People are almost always willing to extend that offer and help.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the other thing I would just add to that is there's a similar correlation to the notion of making mistakes. That is something else that I've learned, which is early on, I come from a tiger family myself, where making mistakes is not seen as a good thing. But you realize that there's a variety of mistakes to be made. And some are things that you have to make. And actually, that's how you learn, is you make a mistake and you adjust course for the next time. Being able to share that with yourself and teams to say, when we make a mistake, we have to segment, is this a mistake that is important for me to make because I'm testing a hypothesis? Or am I making the same mistake over and over again and I'm not learning from the mistake I made last time, which is a whole separate issue that needs different attention than the making of mistakes is how a lot of innovation happens in the world. You just experiment and you try. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, you try something else.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And if we're not making mistakes at all, if you know, everything's always working out, then we're probably playing it too safe. But it can be challenging in a corporate environment where you're expected to, you know, be thoughtful and it's going to work. But I think it takes really great leaders to understand each of the situations and the nuances to say, yes, we can make mistakes over here, but other things we should be checking it out and learning as we go. So that's so interesting. It kind of reminds me of the next topic I wanted to ask you about was really about the future of HR, because you've been thinking a lot about the role of HR in the future. And just can you share with us how you're thinking about and seeing the field shifting over the next few years?
Yeah. I mean, I think as I alluded to when you asked me the question about the general manager job I took, for me, it was this pivot point of understanding that the traditional definition of what people thought HR was, or what we used to do in the days when I started in the industry, which was called personnel, that was the back of the house, payroll processing, the kind of administrative policy police. We've moved well beyond that into an area where we really can impact the work and how it gets done, and we can be a differentiator for companies. Where I think we're going, which is even more, not only thinking about digital and technology and what does that mean for employees and the company, but what does it mean for experiences and how we're showing up in the workplace and how we're working together and how we can bring disparate people from all over the world together in an environment that feels like we're sitting next to each other and things. Those types of things are really evolutionary and revolutionary when you think about working together. The other thing is really understanding that for many, many years, companies have always said people are their most important asset. We haven't always lived up to that. But I think what we learned, especially during the pandemic a few years ago, is that is true, that while we could all disappear and go into the ether sphere and do everything in a digital way or whatever, we are humans and we crave human interactions and human experiences, the need to focus on what it is that brings the value out of people is so important. That can only be done with a focus on people. And that's really what HR is about. It's really about enabling the most important resource in your company, which is your people, to apply that discretionary effort to go above and beyond every day to help make your business better.
Oh, absolutely. We did learn a lot in the pandemic. Yeah, I think HR really stepped up. And I think business leaders really saw the value we can bring. And I think in the future, I'm hoping we're solving business problems. Like we are actually being value creators and we're looking at how we can kind of go beyond what's in our box of typical HR, but sort of connecting the dots to your point, because we're the only function that goes and can talk to operations, finance, sales, supply chain, and can a lot of times see the thread of where things are breaking down, where we're adding complexity, what can be improved. And I think we need to continue to lean into that, be more strategic, to really solve problems that way. you're also seeing not just the future of HR, of course, the roles are going to change, but chief people officers' roles might change in the future. And how are you thinking and seeing the role of the senior HR leaders shifting in the future?
I think even in the last decade, the role of the CHRO has changed, again, from one of orchestrating a whole bunch of processes into one that has become an integral part of whatever it's the 2 in the box, 3 in the box, 4 in the box, key people making decisions and setting strategy for the company. They don't want to talk about what's the latest benefit plan and how's it working. They assume that that's happening. They want to know, okay, what are we not thinking about that we should be thinking about? What's hiding around the corner? What's our competition doing to recruit people with skills that they're so much faster to market than we are? How are they doing this so fast and their marketing is so appealing? And what are the things that they're doing that we're not doing? And how are we preparing the pipeline of talent? How are we preserving the institutional knowledge we need to ensure that we build continuity while at the same time challenging people to think about things they've never thought about? So all of this, I think, is the role of the CPO these days, which is sitting there helping the organization understand how to navigate. And rarely do I go into the meetings with answers, policies, and programs that just kind of say, well, if we just do this, it's going to fix everything. So usually it is a very contentious and back and forth conversation about, do we hire the people or do we train our people? Do we build the skills or do we buy the skills? It's a dynamic conversation that happens with the team about what's the best way to get where we need to go. And most of the time, we're trying to reduce the number of things we're doing, not add. And so then it becomes one of prioritization and focus. Well, I often say to the team, look, I could do 65 HR programs for you, but only 2 are going to really move the needle. So let's prioritize and decide which 2 we're really going to do. And for us, it's really about building future capabilities and making sure that our people have the skills, the resources, and the time to develop themselves, because we can't do it fast enough for everybody that needs to be developed. Those are the types of conversations that I think we're having. So what it requires in our organization and many others is a structure where a lot of the operational aspects of HR are now handled in a part of the organization where operational effectiveness, efficiency, technology, and other things are allowing us to do those with great speed and efficiency and cost saving, as opposed to hordes of people sitting around key punching, which is what it used to be.
Yeah, Lisa, and you're talking about that. A couple of things are going through my mind. And one was really thinking about the role. You're not trying to be all things to all people as a chief people officer. And maybe we were a long time ago. And now I think what I'm hearing from you is really focusing with the business leaders around where you're going in the future. What are the capabilities? What are the things that are going to add the most value? And that's what they should be talking about. That's what senior leaders and business leaders are thinking about. They're not worried about the benefits program like you talked about. So it's a good reminder for HR leaders that sometimes we want to be all things to all people, but we need to pick a lane and really say, hey, this is where we're going to focus. This is how we're going to have impact. You know, we're still going to get the work done, but we want to help you in a certain and different way than maybe we have in the past.
That's right. That's right. And I think the other reputational piece of HR has always been about making employees happy. We do engagement surveys. We ask our people what works, what doesn't work, what they like, what they don't like. And we don't sit around and try to think, oh, we have to get everybody happy on every dimension. Because first of all, if you don't have the right people with the right capabilities and the right mindset to drive your business forward, making those people happy is going to make them stay, which doesn't allow you to have the right skills that you're going to need for the future. So it is double clicking, as you said, on who are the people that we need in the organization. Not to say that we want to discard people, but they have to be fit for purpose for the organization. And we have to be fit for purpose for their aspiration. And that takes a lot more work than rolling out a bunch of programs that just make people happy all the time. That's really not our goal. Our goal is to optimize and create a mutually beneficial relationship where employees get out of it what they need to thrive and feel satisfied and energized, and what the company needs to get the business results that they're driving.
Yeah, I think so well said, and I love that fit for purpose of their aspiration, right? But kind of going back to the question around how you think about where the organization needs to be in the future, what recommendations or advice do you have for next gen HR leaders who are going out and having these conversations with their leaders? How do you initiate and structure that if you're not at the C-suite?
First thing I would say is that you first have to get yourself up to speed on what's going on. So it is, and I say this often, really understand the mechanics and the formula of your business. What business are you in? How are you generating value to the organization? And what's the hierarchy of sort of importance of function, skills, and capabilities to your organization? It's really important, I think, spending time skilling yourself on all that. And then right now, especially, and it's always been this way, but even more so with the pace of change, get yourself up to speed on what's happening in technology and digital. It can have a transformative effect on the workplace. And there's a dual dynamic happening right now, right? There's everything AI and everything tech is going to make the world better. And then there's the other people that are saying it's a risk. We're creating risk because it's going to eliminate jobs and it's going to create all these other things. And so you have to play at that intersection of what's the right balance. And we don't believe it's AI or people. We think it's AI plus people that really optimizes it. And that takes an understanding of where you're going to do that, right? So if you're in the experience business, so we obviously are a beverage company, but we believe that our beverages are consumed in experiences that generate feelings for people. We got to have some humans in there. We can't just have machines do it all. We obviously will automate the things that make sense, but we also need to have the pieces that bring human experiences in. Understanding that, having that full growth mindset, which is challenging your organization to think beyond what they're doing today and encouraging them to do what you're trying to do, which is what's going to happen tomorrow. So you have a whole team of people doing XYZ function. How's that going to change in the future? And what is it that we should be thinking about to get ready for that? We still have a pretty significant retiring workforce that's happening. So that institutional knowledge is about to walk out the door, and we have a gap between that and the people that are in the business not quite ready yet to take over leadership. What are we doing about that? How are we going to manage that transition of knowledge in your organization? And then I would say, we call it progress over perfection, which is don't always try to fix things or put in programs that are kind of the holy grail, which I think in the past, our organization has been guilty of, as well as other large organizations or established organizations, that you got to have everything together in a box with the marketing plan, with here's the training, everything, roll it out. It's all set and static and it stays in place for the next 40 years. Not going to happen. Develop that sort of iterative mindset. Figure out what you're trying to do, build it, iterate, experiment, evolve, change, help get people understanding, whether it's performance management or feedback or other things that you're trying to build into the organization. Sort of the training program of today is not going to be the training program you need tomorrow. And it might not even be a program. It could be an experience or something else. So this progress over perfection mindset is something that I think HR needs to develop. We have to be okay continuing to evolve.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in your organization, it feels like there's just lots of innovation, lots of testing and learning. And that's great, because I think you really are trying to figure out where are we going. Which I think HR really has to be thinking about that. The business is typically two heads down, just not having thoughts about where we're going from a talent and organizational capability perspective. But you mentioned AI, and AI, of course, is something that every organization is talking about. And you guys understand have a head, heart, hand model or framework that you categorize work and how it relates to AI. Can you tell us more about the head, hand, heart framework?
Sure. Yeah, we kind of unashamedly stole that from others. But the focus on that is technology is only as good as the people who build it. And so we don't believe it will ever fully replace humans. But what it can do is make the hands work. The things that are, as I said before, more operational, more mechanical, more rote, repetitive, efficiency sake, you can automate a lot of the handwork and really lose little value to people. Because you're just creating, again, greater efficiency. You're taking mundane tasks off of people's plates and freeing capacity for the head and heart work. And the head work is critical thinking. It's being able to use judgment. It's analyzing situations with data and insights and predicting what's the best answer based on not only data, but on our experiences or our culture or our purpose. And those are things that require the head. And then the heart work is what I just mentioned. It's emotional connection. It's empathy. It's that feeling of experience that you get when you are in an environment and it brings back nostalgia or it gives happiness or joy or laughter. Those are the things that machines can't really generate or create in the way that a human can. So what we try to tell our folks is, look, will technology play a bigger and bigger role in our work? Yes. But our focus is on automating as much hands work as possible to free capacity for you to do the head and the heart work.
I love that. Good model. And you now, since you put that out there, I think a lot of people are going to leverage that model. So whereas it might have been your model to begin with. And we've heard of head, heart, hands for change management, but I think it's a unique approach to bringing that to AI. So I love how you're thinking about that. It's a cool framework. But thinking about the future of work, Lisa, what's one piece of career advice you might give to an early HR leader, you know, with all the change that's coming at them? How do you think about careers in the future for HR?
A couple of things that we just talked about. I think it's always seek to learn. It's that growth mindset, and don't be afraid to try things that you didn't even know you wanted to do. And bring that back into, well, how does this prepare me better for the next thing? I think it's also really important to make sure that that growth mindset happens not only in the function, but in the broader business. Again, it's surprising to me how many HR people don't really understand what's happening in the business. And I used to hear that a lot. Are you in HR or are you in the business? And to me, that's not even a question. HR should be part of the business. So there should not be a distinction of us and them. I think that's increasingly important. I think the other thing that's really important is, as we said earlier, to ask for opportunities. I think more and more you're seeing general managers who are people that have either come from HR or had experiences in HR and vice versa. And I think that's an indication of the breadth needed to run businesses in today's complex dynamic. So raising your hand, getting involved in things, not narrowing yourself to, well, I'm only a comp analyst, or I'm only somebody that does talent management, but really thinking broadly about it and not being afraid to experiment and try new things is incredibly important. Just continue to build as many relationships as you can with people outside of the context of, we're from HR, we're here to help, to, I want to learn the business. How can I help you? What business challenges are you struggling with that I can help be part of brainstorming ways to solve problems? And having a much more proactive approach to things instead of waiting for the proverbial phone to ring with the, hello, HR, I need help.
Oh, that's great advice, really good advice. And I think that piece of, do you work in HR or do you work in the business is so telling, because, and I really hope we never say that ever again in HR. And it's frustrating when business leaders say that to us as well, because we are on the field with the team or they're part of it. We may not be in the game. We might be on the sidelines a little bit, right? Helping people when they come off the field, if we kind of use a sports analogy, but we're in the team. Like,
absolutely.
When you go on a championship team, whether it's a basketball or football, people get the same rings, even if they're in the back office or front office, whatever it happens to be. So I think that's a great analogy. Lisa, last question for you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I think it's impactful. We have an opportunity to really have an impact on people, their careers, their futures, the talent pipeline, as well as the definition of what is a job in the future. So we can really have an impact and have our fingerprints on that. And ultimately, it is a game changer with the business. If you have great HR partners that are doing a lot of the things that we talked about today, it's the differentiator between a company that might have 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 years of blips of success and long-term sustainable growth and success in a company. We talk a lot about sustainability on the ESG side. And I like to focus on people sustainability. Like, do we have the right talent in the organization generation over generation that's going to continue to build success in this organization for the long haul and for the future. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to generate value for our customers, for our shareholders, for our investors, and for our employees.
It's just about being impactful and people sustainability. I love that as well. Lisa, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Great conversation. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Lisa for sharing her insights on how HR leaders can build a fit-for-purpose organization that drives people sustainability. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Christina Norris-Watts, who's the head of assessment and people practices at Johnson & Johnson. And in my conversation with Christina, we go deep on how J&J is using skills to develop personalized learning experiences and so much more. If you ever wanted to hear how skills is being truly implemented and used effectively, then you will not want to miss this conversation. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.